It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Farah. The U.S. Supreme Court wrapped up its term on Friday with high-profile rulings. Cases included a challenge to a part of the Affordable Care Act, state funding for Planned Parenthood, allowing parents to opt their children out of classes if they object to LGBTQ material, and a challenge to a Texas law on internet pornography.
In the most watched ruling, the 6-3 conservative majority limited the ability of federal judges to issue nationwide injunctions against presidential actions. That came from a challenge to an executive order that would overturn birthright citizenship.
So what do these rulings mean here in Wisconsin? Eric Casper is professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire and director of the Menard Center for Constitutional Studies. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Sarah Bennett is professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee. Sarah, thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
Let's start with this executive order relating to birthright citizenship. It's challenged. The court ruled in favor of the president, but not really on that particular topic, but on this idea, Eric, of these universal injunctions. Can you start by talking about what these are, why they've been used in the recent past?
Sure. And these types of universal nationwide injunctions are a judicial tool that had been used and with increasing frequency over the last decade or two, particularly once a executive order has been issued by the president. One of these injunctions might be filed for, and then if it was issued by a judge, it would be one federal district court judge or one trial court judge in the federal system who could issue it and put a stop or an injunction on the implementation of that order that would apply across the country. It is something in which presidents from President Obama to President Trump and President Biden complained about because it allowed, again, for one judge in one district to be able to put a stop on what the president was doing. The flip side of that, of course, is that if there is an executive order that was doing something that was unconstitutional, it allowed for quick judicial action to put a pause on that.
The president responded to the ruling at a press conference Friday. Here's a listen.
In practice, this meant that if any one of the nearly 700 federal judges disagreed with the policy of a duly elected president of the United States, he or she could block that policy from going into effect or at least delay it for many years, tie it up in the court system. This was a colossal abuse of power which never occurred in American history prior to recent decades.
Sarah, what are the implications of this ruling for how we govern in the United States? Congress slow to pass laws, especially on things like immigration. Lately, it seems like a lot of what happens in D.C. comes from executive orders. What does this mean now?
Yeah, I think that's exactly why we've seen such a rise in this sort of action. And Justice Kavanaugh talks about that in his concurring opinion here that, you know, I mean, I think the Trump administration paints this as sort of a nefarious behavior by the district and circuit courts, when in actuality, this is a response to increased executive action because of the difficulty in getting Congress to pass major pieces of legislation. And so I think the implications of this particular ruling are, you know, still really remain to be seen because there are still other venues that the majority opinion leaves open for courts to still take action in these kinds of circumstances through, for example, class action lawsuits. And so there's still an opportunity for courts to react to what they see as unconstitutional actions by the executive or by Congress. But it certainly changes sort of the position of the district court judge vis-a-vis the executive.
Now, this came up to the Supreme Court over a case, an executive order from the Trump administration trying to overturn what's called birthright citizenship. Earlier this year, Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call joined a coalition of 21 other states challenging that order by suing the federal government. WPR reporter Sarah Lear talked to him on Friday after this U.S. Supreme Court ruling we're talking about. Here's a listen.
It's a bit of a setback because it means we're going to need to go back to district court to establish that complete relief in this case for the states, which includes Wisconsin, is going to require an injunction that applies throughout the country. Now, I'm optimistic we will be able to establish that. But what this will mean going forward is that there is now sort of a framework in place for cases challenging actions of the federal government where we are seeking broad relief.
Now, Eric, a couple things there. First of all, this birthright citizenship executive order, because of this ruling, that court ruling saying, no, the Trump administration can't do that, as they understand the states like Wisconsin that were in this lawsuit, that order still applies. The states that weren't, that order doesn't apply. But hang on, there's a month waiting period from the Supreme Court. What does this all mean for this particular case that would overturn well over 100 years of Supreme Court precedent?
I mean, the short answer is, are we confused yet?
I am.
In terms of practical implications moving forward, going back to the universal nationwide injunctions, one of the benefits of them is that there would be a uniform application of the law. So you'd have it across the entire country. It might be right or wrong in the moment until ultimately the Supreme Court weighs in, but you'd have an answer that applies across the country that was uniform. Right now, what we're going to be heading into is, you know, the answer to how this executive order is enforced is going to differ from one state to the next, from one jurisdiction to the next. I think ultimately, until the U.S. Supreme Court takes up the case on the merits, and that'll probably happen sometime in the next year or two, that we'll get a decision from the Supreme Court on the constitutionality of this. But in the meantime, it might be implemented in some parts of the country, and it might be put on hold in other parts.
Sarah, that sounds potentially messy, not just with birthright citizenship, but anything where these court rulings might apply federal law one way in one place and another way in another place.
Yes, it's completely messy. And I think that's exactly what Call was saying there, which is that what the states have to argue here is that in order to obtain complete relief for their unconstitutional, what they see as an unconstitutional ruling, they need this nationwide injunction because for the states, especially as parties, it's not just about one person obtaining an injunction until the Supreme Court can make this decision. It's about all of the things that go into the birth of a newborn and the movement of individuals from state to state and what that means for Social Security numbers and citizenship status and how that's going to change from state to state under this this patchwork. And that's, you know, that's the benefit, as Eric was saying, of the nationwide injunction, is that it provides some interim level understanding of what the state of the federal law is. Without that, we end up having this situation where people aren't exactly sure where they stand.
We were talking about last Friday's Supreme Court rulings. Two Wisconsin political scientists with us to tell us what it means here in the state. Sarah Benesch with UW-Milwaukee, Eric Casper at UW-Eau Claire. I want to touch on a couple of the other rulings. Sarah, let's start with you this time. One, allowing parents to opt out of lessons with LGBTQ plus books in public schools. What could this mean here in Wisconsin? Would people be able to take similar steps here in the state?
Yes, what the court decided in this case, Mahmoud versus Taylor, is that parents need to be afforded the opportunity to opt out of educational use of books that present LGBTQ plus families that implicate their religious exercise. And so what the court here is saying is that a school board who allows for the inclusion of these kinds of books within an English curriculum, has to allow for religious exemptions. It's really interesting the way the court has moved over time on these religious exercise cases, to the point where we now have Alito relying on a very old precedent from Wisconsin, Wisconsin versus Yoder, which established a strict scrutiny level of inquiry into any kind of action by a state that implicates religious freedom. The court has moved a lot over time in this area. And so it's really notable that the court is employing strict scrutiny here and really making it very difficult for a school in this case to sort of make any sort of decision without trying to take into consideration the multitude of impacts that various actions they might take in the classroom could have on individuals' religions.
And then, Eric, another court ruling, a Texas law that would require pornography sites to verify users' age. The Supreme Court said, yes, Texas, you can do that. We have the internet here in Wisconsin, of course. There could be impacts here. What was at the heart of this case?
Sure. And similar to what Sarah was describing with the Mahmoud case, this decision came down to questions under the free speech clause about judicial scrutiny, levels of judicial scrutiny to be applied, where the Supreme Court majority here applies an intermediate level of scrutiny, which is kind of a middle level of scrutiny, to these types of age verification requirements. And ultimately, the state of Texas is concerned with minors having access to pornography online. What the dissent brought to the fore in this case, though, was concerns about access to speech that is constitutionally protected for adults and the ability of adults to access that type of expression and the burden that might be placed on this in terms of them entering in information on a website that with that identity could later, for instance, be stolen. And so see that tension there in the Free Speech Coalition versus Paxton decision as well on what level of scrutiny should courts apply to these types of regulations that affect First Amendment rights.
And we'll leave it there. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Sarah, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Sarah Benish is professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee. Eric Casper, professor of political science at UW-Eau Claire, director there of the Menard Center for Constitutional Studies. They've been with us for a look at the U.S. Supreme Court rulings that were handed down on Friday.